Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What is going on? It's the Ethos Clippers podcast coming at you here Sunday evening after the Los Angeles Clippers even up the series at 2 games apiece without Kawhi Leonard. Goodness gracious, was that a ball game. I'm your host, Brandon Marcus, joined by my co-host, Matt Matawarren, back on the Ethos Clippers podcast. Matt, how are you, my friend?
Oh, it's Ethos Clipper Nation, Brandon Marcus. How the heck are you? You know, the roller coaster ride continues. Great ball game, like you said, highs, lows, and what turns out to be just a fantastic win in the end, thanks to a few factors, which we're going to get into big time.
Yeah, man. So I was able to watch probably half the first quarter, put my kid to sleep, paused it about halfway through the first, and then was able to catch up. And my kid literally slept for his nap from the start of when I came back to the TV to watch and catch up all the way until the final buzzer. And when the final buzzer sounded, he literally woke up like 10 seconds afterwards. So it was perfect timing. Shout out to my child for letting me watch the entire ball game. And I didn't even scream or yell, so I didn't wake him up. It was just he woke up on his own. And man, it seems like he did the opposite of what PG did. You know, PG was sleeping towards the end. And he was on fire to start, and James Harden was very good at the start, and then, boy, was he fantastic in that fourth quarter. I don't even know where to start with this ball game because there's a lot of stuff to hit. There's the Luka and foul trouble that he and Harden got into early on, and how his defense was very poor. There's the refereeing, which certainly played a role in this game, hence the foul trouble. There's PG going nuclear in the first half and then just disappearing in the second half until one of the best shots that you'll see in a clutch situation. There's Harden, who just completely put the Clippers on his shoulders at the end of the ball game. And of course, there's Kawhi Leonard, who we predicted would probably not play if he was not healthy. And the Clippers were somehow better off again without him. And you wonder where this series would be if the Clippers would have held Kawhi Leonard out for the first 4 games. But man, where do you want to start? Because there's a lot that we can hit.
So definitely shout out to your kid for having the perfect timing.
Yes.
Shout out to my kid who is still unborn, perhaps waiting till the end of this series. I'm not quite sure. I did kiss my wife's belly and rub for good luck, so I think she had maybe a little bit to do with it too. I'm gonna give the unborn kid a little bit of credit here. Where to start? You're right. There's so many places to go. I mean, let's.
Do you want to start at the beginning?
What's that?
Do you want to start at the beginning with the foul trouble and how like and PG just going nuts?
I was gonna say let's give the people what they want and start with PG, but yeah, let's do sort of a mix. We'll start from the beginning there.
Okay, so Paul George immediately gets the basket early, and then goes absolutely nuclear from three. He ends up making a three to make it 36-14 at one point, 6 of 9, 3 of 5 from downtown. The Clippers started 0 for 5 from the field, 13 for the next 15 from the field. They made 13 out of 15 shots, absolutely nuclear. And PG had more points after 9.5 minutes in this game than he did all of last game. So you and I had a major back and forth, one of the major disagreements we've actually had on this podcast, where I said that PG has to be one of my least favorite players because he has all of the skills in his locker. All of them. He is an absolute gifted scorer, but he will disappear, and it drives me insane. Hence the 7-point performance last ball game. You don't see that from big-time stars. And here he is, a guy who's going to try and get paid, and he just has not been showing up. But boy, oh boy, he showed up big time in the first half and was absolutely spectacular. At halftime, he had 26 points, a 9 of 14 shooting, 6 of 9 from downtown. Unbelievable performance, Matt. And he certainly needed it because Harden got 2 fouls 4.5 minutes in. Zoo had 2 fouls in the first 8.5 minutes or so. And the Clippers needed to rely on PG to do a lot of the scoring early on, and he really was fantastic.
I mean, he was lava hot. You mentioned 26 points in the first half. He had as many points in the first quarter as the Mavericks as a team, right? He matched them scoring. He was unbelievable. Open shots, contested shots, drawing and one, getting into the paint. He was so aggressive. And in the post-game interview, James Harden even mentioned he was asked about Paul George's first half performance, and he said he was aggressive. And that's what Paul George said he was going to do at the beginning of the season and what he did from time to time. But you're right, it hasn't been consistent. And you want to talk about the second half, that's when it wasn't consistent. But he was so nuclear in that first half that, of course, the Clippers don't win this game if he doesn't have that type of performance. And he hit, like you said, one of the most clutch threes you could imagine. And I don't want to... You can't overlook the block from behind he had on Kyrie, too. Mm-hmm. That Kyrie was also lava hot coming in after that second half. And the second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. But he had a block on Kyrie that was huge and a huge three. You're right. You're going to talk about how much he disappeared. He's still not one of my least favorite players to watch. He's one of my favorites still. But that first half was unbelievable. And the Clippers obviously don't get this game without that performance.
Well, that's why he's one of your favorite players, because he's capable of doing what he did in the first half. I mean, that was a hell of a performance, man. And what we've all been begging him is to shoot the three, because he's a very good three-point shooter. He was able to create for himself. He was hitting basically everything, contested jumpers. He was getting to his spots, and he was fantastic. And you have to give credit to him. And it's funny because I mentioned fouls. Well, his name wasn't there when I mentioned the guys that got into foul trouble early. And the reason why, because we were talking last game how he's basically been averaging 5 fouls during this series, they came out before the game and they said PG will not guard Luka and Kyrie due to his foul trouble issues, because he just continues to struggle against those two guys. And the Clippers changed up their defense. And it's funny because PG was able to just shoulder the load offensively and not need to work as hard offense, or rather defensively, in that first half. And it surely showed, because he led the Clippers to a 31-point lead. I mean, shades of that first game where the Clippers built a huge lead and then Dallas started to come back, except this time Dallas came all the way back and gave the Clippers a huge fright, but they were able to come away with the win. So shout out to PG for an unbelievable first half. And now we'll go into the second half, where he was absolutely a disappearing act. And you wonder, how is that possible? That is what drives me nuts about Paul George. He can be as good as he was in that first half, and you would think that he would be aggressive and want to continue going in that third quarter. He didn't take a freaking shot for like the first 9 or 10 minutes of that third quarter. And it just, you look at what happened, and in the third quarter, I believe these are the numbers. He had 3 fouls in that quarter, 3 turnovers in that third quarter, and 3 field goals attempted. That was courtesy of Law Murray, the NU on Twitter. Just what? How do you be as good as you were in that first half? And I get you're not going to continue to be as good. You're going to have regression to the mean. But this is an unbelievably terrible regression, beyond regression to the mean, to have three fouls, three turnovers, only three field goals attempted, and the Clippers only scored 5 points in the final 6 minutes of the third quarter. And so as much praise as you want to give PG for that first half, Matt, you have to give him a ton of blame for that third quarter, because in this situation, he is the number one guy. He is the dude that's supposed to carry you to a win, and he just completely went behind whatever you want to call it. He went behind the blinds, whatever, and he was a disappearing act, and that's what frustrated me about this game, is that he could be as good as he was in that first half and then just disappear, Matt.
I mean, I don't think Houdini is famous for disappearing. I think it's getting out of messes, but I can't think of another magician, David Blaine, whatever disappearing artist is. I can't think of a magician who's famous for disappearing, but that's kind of what he was doing, and you're right. You know, we were texting back and forth, and you were obviously lamenting about how can a guy who played this well and was this aggressive in the first half disappear like this, and I said he needs to demand the ball and just to, you know, he's got to force the issue at times, and that's what you do as a superstar. But to be fair, because we're going to get into James Harden, how brilliant he was in the fourth quarter. I got news for you. Paul George outscored James Harden in the third quarter because Harden had no points on one field goal attempt, if I'm reading my numbers correctly. So it's not as if in the third quarter anybody for the Clippers really played all that well. They only had 16 points as a team, the same amount that Paul George had in the first quarter. So it's crazy that he'll disappear like that. But it sort of was the old third quarter malaise that the Clippers can fall prey to. So yes, he deserves blame for the third quarter and for the fourth quarter as well, except, you know, he had some huge plays, like we said, which superstars do. And that's how you win games. And we always say the reason you get James Harden is if one of Paul George or Kawhi get hurt, which is often happens, and Kawhi is now hurt, then you have another superstar like James Harden to step up, which he did. And so Paul George, you know, you have that safety blanket for the Clippers. But as much as we would like to focus on Paul George's propensity to sort of disappear, you got to look at what he did in the first half. He's got to realize, and you know he will, that there's no way that he can perform. You can't have this Jekyll and Hyde of the first half, you're absolutely amazing. The second half, you have a couple of plays, but you disappear. Mm-hmm. He'll realize that. We're not going to be the only two to talk about it. Ty Lue's hopefully should get in his ear, his teammates, his people, his podcast partners. Paul, you got to play like this for the entire game. And that he was able to play that way, that he has it in him, should actually make us pretty optimistic about the series moving forward, especially now that home court advantage is back on the Clippers side.
Yeah, and listen, it's as much as we want to blame Paul George, I mean, you got to blame Ty Lue as well, because it's up to the head coach to get your star player looks, design plays for him, and he clearly wasn't doing a good enough job. But listen, the Clippers wouldn't have been in this spot without that incredible first half. And then it's funny because Paul George could have easily been the GOAT. I mean, could have been the guy you blamed in the fourth quarter, because the Clippers led 104-100, and Zoo comes out of the ball game, which, by the way, I mean, I don't want completely go past this because we have so much to talk about, but Ty Lue nearly cost the Clippers the series there. I mean, how many times have we talked about how Zoo continues to come out of the game in big spots unnecessarily?
Like when the Clippers have a lead.
Yeah, unnecessarily. When you have the lead, you want to have your best defense out there. And he has this thing where he wants to have guys that can switch to defend the perimeter. But the issue is, you need to actually get rebounds as well. So he has Zoo come out of the game, and what happens? Kyrie hits a three over Paul George, where Paul George has got to know how much time is on the shot clock, and he has got to come out and contest that shot by Kyrie. Because he didn't, Kyrie drains the triple, makes it a one-point game, and then Kyrie gets a shot at the rim with three guys there that he's able to make, and guess who one of the three guys was not? Ivica Zubac. He needs to be in that ball game, because guess what? Kyrie does not do that if Zoo is at the rim. And so you need to have Zu in the game late for rebounding and interior defense. And it nearly cost the Clippers. But then Zu comes back in. PG, it's that ridiculous three. So PG's to blame for that Kyrie triple. I mean, Kyrie shot it from way downtown, but PG has got to contest it. But to hit that three in the corner where JJ Redick, an absolute sharpshooter, even he was really impressed by that shot that was basically behind the backboard when he got rid of it. To hit that three and then for Harden to get the and one to go up by 110, get to go up 110-105, that was all she wrote. So Paul George was terrible in the second half, but he hit the shot that mattered. And the Clippers would not have been where they were tonight, or rather this afternoon, without Paul George. So shout out to him, but a very bizarre sequence at the end of the ballgame.
Very bizarre. And I do want to mention, and you're right about that one Kawhi three, but I just want to reiterate the block that he had from behind, if you remember, when Kyrie, you know, was on fire, and who knows, maybe that could have swung the game in any other direction. So he also did have a stellar defensive play. As one block of the game was huge. He also had four steals. And you mentioned J.J. Redick being impressed by the three. That's news to me because I mentioned to you at halftime that the announcing crew was just annoying me, pissing me off. So I put it on mute. My wife, by the way, and I'm sure my unborn daughter, they think that I am crazy because I watched the entire second half on mute. The only sound in the room was the sound of the fan going and me making noises and cursing. But I didn't have the sound on for 1 second of the second half, and it must have looked really strange. And there's somebody knocking at my door, probably some kids in the building. But it was super. I was here in complete silence watching that second half. It was very bizarre.
Yeah, it's I get what you're saying about the crew. They continue to talk about that 31-point lead, and it's one of those things where, as a broadcasting crew, you have people coming into the game at different points, so you kind of need to tell the story of the ball game. And at this point, the story of the ball game was the Clippers blowing the lead. And so I get why they continue to mention it. That was obviously a big gripe that you had with Mike Breen and how they continue to talk about it, but it really was a story of the game. I mean, if I was broadcasting a game like that and the Clippers blew a 31-point lead and all of a sudden it was a couple of possession game, you got to keep mentioning it. So I understand your gripe with them. But whatever. Luckily, the Clippers were able to win the ball game.
And it was just a gripe at the moment. And then the reason I left it was more superstition than anything that I left the sound off. I was like, you know, if I turn the sound on, they might lose the game. So I just kept it off, and I guess I was better for it.
Yeah, listen, the Clippers ended up winning, so it's fine. All right, let's talk about James, because you and I spoke about this when the trade happened, and you know how in favor of the trade I was. And I said, you have got to do this trade because PG and Kawhi just don't stay healthy. And I said, the Clippers don't have a chance anyways to win at all if they don't have all three healthy, but you really don't have a chance if one of those guys goes down and you don't have a third player. And so they trade for James Harden, and he just raises the ability to get wins when one of your stars is out. So here we are. Kawhi is out with the inflammation in his knee. And Harden was very good in that first half and unbelievable in the second half. I mean, you look at in the first half, he had 18 points on 6 of 8 shooting, 4 of 4 from downtown. It's funny because you made a big point to talk about how upset you were with how many minutes he was playing and how you thought he might get worse during the series because of how tired he was. Man, that was not the case today. Goodness gracious. He was tremendous, not only in the first half, but in the second half as well. And yes, he did not do anything in that third quarter, and that's part of the reason why Dallas came back. But vintage Harden, man, it's funny because he does that step back three so often on the perimeter, defenders don't know how to guard him because they think that every time he starts to go towards the paint, he's going to take a couple steps back and fire a three. So they have got to kind of stay with him on the perimeter. But when he decides to actually go towards the cup, those guys are so late because they think he's going to stay on the perimeter. He blows past them, and the rotation is slow, and he gets those floaters. And he was just absolutely sensational. There was a stat I saw from Tim McMahon about his floaters, and here it is. So, James Harden, today in the clutch, Tim McMahon, 13 points, 5 of 6 from the field, every field goal attempt was a floater. Harden by shot today. Young Masuk. Floater, 5 of 6. Step back, 5 of 5. Drive, 1 of 3. Pull up, 1 of 3. Those first two are really important. Step back, 5 of 5. Because he was so good with the step back, you had to honor that. And that opened up the floater game and allowed him to just thrive in that fourth quarter. So the guy that was 1 of 4 on floaters through the first three games of the series ends up going 5 for 6 all in the fourth quarter. So shout out for James Harden doing what he needed to do to get the Clippers the win. But the floater thing is certainly interesting, but it's because he was able to hit so many of those threes. If he wasn't hitting those threes earlier in the game, I don't think that opens up the floater game late in the fourth quarter, but it did, and the Clippers were able to thrive.
I mean, you're right. And the Beard, he's one of the greatest offensive players of all time. Sometimes we forget that because he's a little bit older. Of course, I was concerned with the minutes. I will always be concerned with a guy like Harden playing over 40 minutes, but he did obviously very well in those minutes today. And, you know, I was thinking about it. I was trying to come up with something like, and something where like Paul George had a floater in game three, but the floater from James Harden wins the game in game four. It's a little vulgar, but, or like this is the Modest Mouse game. We'll all float on. I was trying to think about it because the floater was so apparent that was just killing the Mavericks. And you're right. The instinct to know how to do that is just that speaks to James Harden as one of the greatest offensive players we've had in the last couple of decades. And if that three is not going, then you're right. You're going to have to respect James Harden from behind the line anyway, just because of his body of work. And it reminds me a lot. I mean, he gets compared to Luka a lot, or the two of them get compared together because of, you know, they're so heliocentric in their play. There's a lot of ISO, the step back and all this stuff. And you see Luka going into the paint quite a bit as well. And it's because you do have to respect that three. So there's a lot of similarities between the two of them, but he was so, so clutch down the stretch in that fourth quarter. You know, like we said, you don't win the game if Paul George doesn't have that first half, and you don't win the game, obviously, if James Harden doesn't have that fourth quarter. So for all the bemoaning about how the Clippers came out of the gate after the James Harden trade, and then the chemistry that he had with Zoo and just galvanizing the team and getting them together on that big run they went with, at the end of the day, like you said, the main reason that you trade for James Harden is because he is this offensive force and he is that next guy up. If one of the other two superstars, if one of 2-1-3 goes down, and obviously this year it's Kawhi. So kudos to him. And yeah, I have no problem with the minutes tonight, obviously.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about this game, but first let's take a quick break.
For 25 years, nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
All right, so obviously, I mean, the minutes, you look at his minutes today, by the way, and we're going to talk about a certain Terrence Mann in a second in his minutes. James Harden played 40 minutes, and 40 minutes and 1 second to be exact. And this is actually the second most minutes he's, or second fewest minutes he's played in this series, third most, whatever you want to look at it as, whether you want to look glass half full or glass half empty. He was at 43-55 last game, which is crazy considering how bad the Clippers were. 41-53 in game two. 39-26 in game one. So 40 minutes, 33 points, 12 of 17 from the field, 4 of 5 from downtown. And it's funny because he was 4 of 5. He didn't hit a 3 in the second half. 6 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, and a block. So he was really, really good. And yeah, man, he certainly is the reason why you're able to win a game one series. Because you trade for a guy like James Harden. And as pessimistic as I was after game three, you certainly have the blueprint of how you beat Dallas, and it's very good shooting. I mean, the Clippers, I think, hit, what, 18 threes today? And they hit 18 threes in game one as well, and that's how you win. I mean, you got to get hot from three, because this is a team that is not a great just jump shooting team. You have a couple of guys that can, but with no Kawhi Leonard, it's more just you dump down low with Zoo, or you shoot threes with Harden, PG, Norm, T-Man. So you got to be good from three. And the Clippers were able to get to the cup today, get a couple of easy baskets. And what that did is that opened up the spray game, and the Clippers were able to kick it out. I mean, there was one play that I remember vividly when Terrence Mann drove to the cup. He got caught in the air, and you're like, oh no. Kicked it out to an open shooter for a three ball. I think it was PG.
And, it was PG.
Yeah. And it's just one of that's the type of play that wins you games, is that you're able to get to the cup, you collapse the defense, you pass out to an open guy. And in this case, it was PG, and the Clippers were able to win that game because they were able to be so good from downtown. And that's going to be the key going forward. The Clippers are going to have to take a ton of threes, and that's today's modern NBA, is that you have to be good from three-point range. And I feel like that's the blueprint. You do that, plus you lock in defensively, and you have success. And it's funny because I mentioned Luka Doncic and how terrible he was defensively. I think Joey Lynn posted that the Clippers were 10 of 15 when defended by Luka. So all this talk about how good Luka was defensively after game two, and he picked up two early fouls, which did not help the cause, because he was basically a revolving door at that point, because he didn't want to pick up his third foul in the first half, and that helped the Clippers get to that huge lead. But he was a guy that just didn't really impress defensively. He was whining after every single basket on the offensive end, or every single miss. He thought he was fouled. He is just unbelievable and unbearable to watch. But listen, the Clippers were able to take advantage of a guy in Luka on the perimeter, and that's how you win. You take advantage of the poor basketball players defensively, and you make threes. And I think that's kind of what the Clippers need to do going forward.
So you talked about a lot, and a few things. Yeah. We'll start with the threes, and that definitely is the reason that the Clippers won this game. They made 18 to 11 three-pointers, so that's in favor of the Clippers. So they would have lost because the Mavericks pretty much played them even or had them beat on all other statistics. Like, you look at points in the paint, it's negligible. The Clippers only won by 4, and they won the game by 5. Okay, so I guess that makes sense. But fast break points, dead even. Points off of turnovers, Dallas scored 23 to 12, so they killed him off the turnovers. It was 17, and then the Clippers even had less turnovers, but Dallas scored way more off the turnovers. All the other blocks, assists, I mean, everything is kind of dead even if you look at this, except for offensive rebounds, where the Dallas had 14 to 5, so they killed him on the offensive glass. But were it not for that three-point barrage, and especially in the first half, the Clippers lose this game. So being hot from downtown, and it's not just PG, who was killer, but like you said, it was Harden, but it's also Norm, who hit 3 three-pointers. T-Man had 3 of his own. So the three-point shot really got them going. Westbrook even got in the mix and had a three-pointer. So that was really the thing, that the great shooting from beyond the arc. I mean, look, you shoot 62%, you make 18 of them, you got a good chance of winning. And then you talked about how you were pessimistic about this game, but you also called Ballmer's Brunch Boys. How about the matinee miracles that we've been having lately? You said it's, I mean, maybe kind of in jest, but they win the two matinee games. How un-Clipper-like is that? So this series is all over the place, roller coaster ride, but they win both afternoon games, which is great. And we'll see what happens moving forward. But T-Man, like you mentioned him as well, and I just said he had three pointers. So Paul George being taken off of Luka means T-Man needs to guard him more, and that means he's playing 35 minutes as compared to what was 21 or whatever he played in a previous game. Him on the floor and just him defensively and his energy, like we've mentioned a million times before, so happy to see him get those minutes. And of course, Kawhi being out has something to do with that as well. But I thought T-Man, despite the box score, might not tell the story, but he was phenomenal, I thought.
Unbelievable. He was outstanding defensively. And it's funny because at halftime, I tweeted this. After playing just under 39 minutes in a Game 1 win, T-Man went on to play 20 minutes and 42 seconds in Game 2 and 22 minutes and 46 seconds in Game 3. He was at 21:49 in the first half. Okay? He had one less minute in the first half of Game 4 than he had in all of Game 3. He played more in the first half of Game 4 than he played in all of Game 2. It's not a surprise. The Clippers were good. T-Man's defense is very important in this series against Luka and Kyrie. Kyrie did not score for the first quarter and a half. Luka has not been shooting well at all. Luka today was 10 of 24. Last game, Luka was 7 of 25, 11 of 26 in the first two games of the series. He has not been shooting well. He's not been going nuclear like he did the last couple of times these two teams played in the postseason. T-Man is very important what the Clippers do. His plus-minus was only a +4 in a 5-point win, and he didn't do a whole lot offensively. He had a couple of huge threes, though. He was 3 of 6 from downtown and continues to be an amazing 3-point shooter in the postseason. But, man, his defense is so critical in this series, and it's funny because this is where Kawhi playing hurts the Clippers because you limit a guy like T-Man's minutes. T-Man playing is critical because of the defense and what he can do as a three-point shooter as well. Whereas Kawhi wasn't hitting a single three, T-Man can hit those threes. And so that is why you see the Clippers have success in Game 1 and Game 4, is because T-Man's defense and the ability to contribute on the offensive end.
And I know that Luka is so annoying to watch in his complaining and his, you know, every play is a, you know, he's been murdered on the floor, but I love T-Man on him because for some reason, and this has gone back years and years and years, T-Man just, I mean, of course he gets in his shorts and he plays them really well, but he also just pisses Luka off. And I like seeing a frustrated, red-faced Luka rather than a confident, I'm going to take every shot Luka. Like there was, he got that T, it was, he maybe could have had one or two more, but he's just barking at the refs and he just gets really frustrated. And I think, of course, that benefits the Clippers if he's not playing to his maximum level. But so a couple of things to get into then after T-Man. You mentioned Kawhi. We should probably just talk about Kawhi a little bit and what we think is going to happen moving forward. If the Clippers are better served for him just sitting. And then also mentioning Luka and his red-faced crying to the refs. You mentioned the refereeing earlier too. Something else we can get into.
Yep, those are the last two things I want to talk about. So you hit the nail on the head there. Let's hit on Kawhi. I don't think we see him again this series. I'd be very surprised if all of a sudden he's able to get that inflammation down to the point where he's able to cut the way he wants to cut and be confident in landing after a dunk, which apparently has not been the case. The Clippers, this series, maybe if it goes like 7, maybe we see him. The spacing has been somewhat kind in that the next game is not obviously until Wednesday, and then the following game is on Friday. I find it very hard to believe that he'll suddenly be ready to go on Wednesday. And if that's the case, then I don't believe he'll be able to go again on Friday because it's a couple days after. Because it's my theory again. If he's not ready to go Wednesday, why would he be ready to go on Friday? So I would be very surprised if we see Kawhi Leonard again this series. And frankly, the Clippers are probably better off for it. If they lose because he hasn't come back, that's fine. but they need a fully healthy Kawhi Leonard in order to have a shot at winning the title. And that's why you do this, Matt, is that you want to win the title. And if you bring back Kawhi and he again is not completely healthy and he has another setback, then you're screwed. And so you're better off trying to win this without him. If you do, great. If you don't, then it's what it is. And the Clippers just have bad luck again. But you have to try and win this series without him, because then you can incorporate him, hopefully, in a series two, or rather a round two series. And that's where you have a shot to go ahead and try and win the whole thing. So that's where I stand on it. I don't think we see him again for this series. What about you?
I don't think there's any chance you see him for the series. And I wonder if now, because we mentioned this before, you know, if Kawhi wants to play, then it's hard not to play him. But I think after those two games, games two and games three, I think that decision may have now actually been taken out of his huge hands. I think now the team, Ty Lue, Lawrence Frank, and the rest of the crew realize, look, this is just for the good of the team, because how many times did they mention how tentative he was, even landing after a dunk, he was concerned. So there's no reason to play him for the rest of this game. Like you said, T-Man on Luka, on White Claw, but when he gets mad, Red Claw, Red Face Claw. It you can win this series without Kawhi, but moving forward to face possibly an OKC and then ultimately a you would think a Denver in the conference finals, that's when Kawhi is going to be necessary to win that. So to see Kawhi for the rest of the series, I think, is incredibly unlikely. Rehab the knee, see if he can get up to 100%, because, you know, and I was probably wrong just saying if Kawhi can play, you have to play him. Maybe that's not the case. I was probably wrong on that, because it was proven today, and it was probably proven in game two and three when he did play. It can be a detractor, as you know, turns out. So I don't think we see him as much as we, as Clippers fans, are desperate to see a fully healthy Kawhi Leonard on the floor. It's just not what we're going to get, especially, like you said, in 2 days or 3 days from now, and then a couple of days after that. I don't see it happening either.
Yeah, and listen, Lawrence Frank said before the game that Leonard's not dealing with an acute injury, and that Leonard believes...
it's definitely not cute.
And that Leonard's very frustrated, and that every movement was very restricted. And it boggles my mind, because you bring up a really good point that the decision has been taken out of his hands. For a training staff that has been so cautious with Kawhi Leonard the last several years, so weird that after they go up one game to none, they decide that's the time that they want to bring him back. Like, why don't you at least go one more game and give the Clippers a chance to maybe go up 2-0 without him and give him even more rest and see how it kind of goes game by game? There was no reason to bring him back for game two after you stole game one. If it's 1-1, so be it, and that's what it ended up being. Like, I just don't understand why a training staff that was so cautious let Kawhi make the decision that he can come back when he clearly wasn't 100%, and he actively hurt the Clippers for two games in a row. It's just a decision that truly makes no sense to me.
Right. You're like Operation Ivy. Caution is a word that you can't understand. C-A-U-T-I-O-N is a word you cannot understand. But was it the training staff's decision, or is it going back to that Kawhi said, I'd like to play, and they bend to the will? I don't really know. But it seems like that's what I'm saying. I think the decision was in his hands. And as much as the Clippers want to say we're going to do what the medical staff says, I think Kawhi is a little more pull or a little more say than maybe we might think. And that's just me. I mean, I have nothing to prove that, but I think that might be the case.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I don't expect to see him back. And by the way, if he does come back, he won't be 100%. And I think that he may be actively hurting the Clippers again if he does come back. So we'll see what happens the rest of the series. That's our prediction on Kawhi. Now, the final thing we want to talk about, and you and I actually don't talk about this at all on this podcast. And so credit to us for not being those fans that blame refs, because I just don't see the refereeing as usually a big problem. But in this game, man, you look in that third quarter where PG and Zoo were both clearly fouled, especially Zoo, where he was hacked going up, and they were able to challenge, and the ball went off of him, even though he's clearly fouled. That was just nuts to me.
That's hacked in the arm, swiped in the arm, yep. So clearly.
That's how you go on a run, is that you get those types of calls. And so between those two no calls, and then Harden and Mann both get four fouls with 4 minutes left in the third quarter, and then Zoo picks up his fourth foul. It's like, what is going on? The refs had some sort of motive to limit the most important players for the Clippers. Harden, Mann, Zoo all pick up four fouls, and all of a sudden, the Clippers were in big trouble because those guys may have stayed on the floor, but it limits what they're able to do. So I thought the refereeing was really bad in this ball game, and it luckily didn't hurt the Clippers, but it was a major problem throughout. And I thought it was on both sides. In the first half, if you're a Dallas fan, you could make the case that there's something was not going your way, but they were really bad in the third quarter towards the Clippers.
I mean, you tweeted this out, and I just agreed with Zoo gets one of the worst whistles, just kind of across the board. And you're right, we don't talk about it all that often because, I mean, how often does refereeing really decide games? And it really didn't in this game, to be perfectly honest with you. But you have to mention it because, man, it was a strange showing. There were fouls that weren't called. There were strange fouls that were called. And you're right, on both ends. But to talk just on the Clippers side of it, because this is indeed a Clippers podcast, That one challenge where they reversed possession, even though Zoo clearly slapped on the arm. I mean, that was crazy. Harden had four, Team Mann had four. I mean, you look across the board. The only one you can kind of look on the box score and be like, yeah, I get it. Is that Plumlee had five? You're like, okay, well. And by the way, Plumlee, who we didn't mention, he was actually kind of exceptional in his 14 minutes. Yeah. I thought he had some great plays, so we shouldn't leave Plum Dog Millionaire off the ledger here. But the refing was just it was bizarre, and ultimately, I don't know if it really swayed the game one way or the other. But the point is that maybe it could have. I don't think it did, but it could have.
Yeah, a couple huge plays from Plumlee in that fourth quarter to help the Clippers get that lead back to 11. And it's funny because you just said that it could have made a difference. Well, it really could have made a difference when Dallas made it 71-61, and then T. Lou challenged a foul on Paul George when P.J. Washington swung his elbow into him, and they called P.G. for the foul. T. Lou ends up winning that challenge. It was ruled an offensive foul, and Team Mann hits a three to make it 74-61. If for some reason that didn't get overturned, Dallas all of a sudden could cut it to 7 or 8, then this could be a totally different outcome. But because Ty Lue challenged that play, which was a very bad call in the first place when PG got elbowed straight into the chops by PJ Washington, ruled an offensive foul, and then the other way, Terrence Mann had a three. So that could have been a 5 or 6 point swing. And so big time challenge there by Ty Lue that had a huge impact in the game. And that's where the refs almost cost the Clippers. But luckily, Ty Lue was smart enough to challenge that play. And it could have been the difference, Matt. But luckily, it did not. And we're sitting here talking about the refereeing and how poor things went. I mean, Dallas fans could have a gripe that Luka had a couple of fouls early on, even though Luka does commit fouls. But yeah, the refereeing was not good.
What? And just so quickly, is there any reason... And you definitely believe this because you tweeted out, why does Zoo just get such a... They just swallow the whistle. I mean, time and time again, not just in this series, but throughout the season and kind of throughout his Clippers career.
I'm glad you asked. And it's funny because as someone that broadcasts basketball, I'm a little bit closer to the floor, obviously, because I'm courtside for these games. And you hear what coaches are saying. It's very hard to referee big men. And if you're an NBA ref, that's not an excuse. Just because a guy is big, you cannot have guys get away with destroying them in the paint. Like, you looked the other day and you saw Zoo backing down on Gafford. Those two guys were going back. I mean, you're backing down. It's just two big guys banging. Yeah, two big guys banging down low. Like, they're doing it to each other. But in this case, like, if Zoo's going up and he gets hacked, like, for some reason, referees think it's a lot harder because they're bigger dudes. They think that for some reason, they don't need to call certain plays because the guy got more of the ball, or that he, for some reason, the physicalness went both ways. Like, it's just one of those things where it's very hard to referee big men. And sometimes you call fouls on big men when they're not fouls because you think that, you know what, that's, you know, it's a bigger guy and he was went into a smaller guy. It's like, it's not a foul. It's just he played defense. But the other way, it's like you get hacked and for some reason it doesn't get called. So it is much tougher to referee big men. And that, listen, Shaq used to get hacked all the time. Granted, Shaq's a bigger dude, but nonetheless, it happens with Embiid too. Even though he goes to the free throw line a lot, it's just, it's a lot harder to referee big men. And that's the story. That's the story of that one.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's like you get penalized just for your size, really. Yeah. And it's either you get the benefit of the doubt or you don't. You're right. I mean, Embiid lives at the line. Like if Embiid were to be healthy for a full season, he would rival the Joker and now, of course, Wembanyama for the number one pick in fantasy because he's so good at the line and he goes like 12 times a game. I mean, it's crazy how much he goes to the line. And Zoo went twice tonight. Not that he's Embiid. I'm not comparing the two, but I'm just saying. So yeah, it's wild, and that's a great perspective. I'm glad you're able to elaborate on that because it's interesting to know. And it does make sense that refs would have trouble sort of officiating these bigger guys and what to do, but you can't just swallow the whistle all the time.
Yeah. Listen, we're 43 minutes in, but there's one last thing I want to hit on, and we can do it very quickly. Where are you right now on how much Russell Westbrook should be playing? Because as much as he can be an impact player on the defensive end, he is actively hurting the Clippers on the offensive end. He was, what, 0 for 7 last game, 2 for 8 today. His missed jumpers basically are turnovers that are live ball turnovers that result in baskets the other way. It just seems like an out-of-control nature is something the Clippers can't have in a series like this. I mean, if you're down and you need someone to change the tempo, I get it. But, man, he was not good at all again today. And there's got to be something where his minutes start to get limited if he's hurting the Clippers, because 22 minutes is a lot to give a guy that is right now making the Clippers play 5-on-4 on offense because of his inability to hit a shot.
I think he's in I will defend Russell Westbrook, obviously. You know this at this point, until the day I die, but I think he's like a high teens guy at this point because you're right. On offense, there is nothing happening, and he had, you know, he misses the free throws, and then he gets that steal, and it doesn't really turn into anything. And so great, he does bring some great energy off the bench. I think it's really going to be in Ty Lue's court here to figure out when the injection of energy is needed, because that's what Russell Westbrook is bringing: some defense, some rebounding, of course. But there's going to be nothing on offense. So if the Clippers look a little stagnant, if you need an injection of energy, if it's ISO, 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 like you and I always hate, and it's your turn, my turn, or something like that, and you need to get the juice going, maybe you get Russell Westbrook in there at that point. But if you have the lead, if you need, you can't depend on him as an offensive player right now. It's just not happening in this series. So I think he's going to be sort of an energizer bunny kind of guy. And that's what his role needs to be moving forward.
Yeah, it's just, you can't have this in the postseason where everything is so large. Every series, I mean, every minute, every quarter.
Every second, every play. It's like everything is boiling down. I mean, like, you know, we're clenched on all of this. And you're right. What do you think his role should be moving forward?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that you just need to limit him into the role of being a huge help defensively. And if Harden's going to play big minutes, I just don't think there's a need to have those two guys on the floor a whole lot. So I'll be curious to see if the Clippers do expand the rotation, maybe bring in Bones Highland. Probably not. I feel like the Clippers are going to stick with this 8. But certainly watching Westbrook will be key, because if he can't shoot the basketball, like, he basically has a quarter and a half to figure it out. If he doesn't, then you got to ride the pine because you can't limit the Clippers' offense. And as good as the Clippers were in the first half, he certainly hurt them a lot in that second half with stupid turnovers and just dumb fouls and big misses that lead to shots on the other end. So we'll see what ends up happening with him. Anywho, that will do it here for this podcast. I have a review to read, though, before we say goodbye. It's from Kyle.
Ooh, awesome.
KyleM4711 that said, "Great Clippers podcast." That's the title. And the message he wrote, "It's the perfect mix of banter, nerdiness, hoops talk, prediction, and reality. I appreciate all the work you all put into the podcast. Go Clips. Bingo." So shout out to Kyle. Appreciate that review. You too can leave a review over wherever you listen to your podcast. Give us that 5-star rating. Currently have 68 ratings. Let's see if we can get that to 75 by the end of the postseason. Give us that 5-star review, and if you, or rather 5-star rating, if you can drop a review as well, certainly does help. So that's the review, the new one from Kyle, Matt.
Thank you, Kyle. I mean, it's always just, it blows my mind every time we get a review, especially a positive one.
Yeah.
And I know you said we're running long. We all have children or children that are about to be born to tend to. Quickly and just very quickly, Coffee and Powell, the only two players who played that we didn't mention. Anything on those guys?
Powell hit shots, which is nice. I think he had 6 points in the first half and then only 5 in the second half. I need a little bit more from him. I think if you want to win a ball game, you just need to get more guys that are contributing offensively. And so I think you need to get Norm closer to that 15 to 20 point mark. And Coffee was fine. I mean, I don't think he did anything that really stood out that hurt the Clippers. He was a -6 in this game. He's actually one of the only two players that was a minus along with Zoo. But there's nothing that I really noticed that where he was hurting the Clippers. He probably just happened to be on the floor when Dallas was making that crazy run where Kyrie somehow outscored the Clippers from halfway through the first half. Or halfway through the second quarter, rather, all the way to like the 1 minute mark of the third, where he had more points than the Clippers as a team. So yeah, that's really it for those two guys. Is that I think Norm needs to be a little bit more involved offensively, especially if he's shooting as well as he is, and Amir just be that glue guy.
I totally agree. I think Amir he continues to show his defensive chops. Just because of his size and he can move and switch well. And then you're right, Norm played 32 minutes. Just got to get a little more going offensively. I know in game 3 he had it going, but that didn't really matter. So moving forward to game 5, which I'm predicting is the day my daughter will be born, we got to get Norm. I'll be yelling Norm in the delivery room, and they're gonna be like, "What in the world is this guy talking about?"
Oh man, little does your daughter know her middle name is going to be Norm. Should be
it fun. Might be her first name, but don't tell her mom that.
Okay, fine. Yeah, well, listen, you'll let us know. So yeah, most likely you probably will not be on the podcast after game number 5, so we'll see how that goes. Of course, you can follow Matt on Twitter/X at Matt Warren. I'm at BDMarcus. Once again, if you give us that 5-star rating, review the podcast, it does go a long way. And shout out to our friends over at Believe for helping grow our podcast. So until next time, he's Matt, I'm Brandon, and go Clips.
Go Clips.
For 25 years, nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use 3 kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
You can live out your MasterChef dream when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.